Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step.
Because I
just start screaming, ah, yeah. It's the beginning.
It's the beginning. I always feel like I'm saying, like, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Because I'm from Actorland,
yeah.
We call it a stage name. So your rave stage name is King Topher.
No one's ever called it a rave stage name.
I don't know.
But you know, it's just my artist name.
Your artist name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you had 180 million streams on Spotify.
Yes.
Which song was that?
All of them combined.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, in total.
Yeah, in total.
Yeah.
One song, I think it was last week, hit 60 million streams, which
wow
is a lot of streams for a song.
That's a lot of streams.
I made Interscope Records a lot of money on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So you were signed to the same label as Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
That I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Okay. There you go.
And it was not the longest live experience.
Yeah.
But it was basically about a year. I mean, it was only for four songs. They signed me for a four-song EP.
Yeah.
And then there were options in the contract of if these blow up, then they want to do more.
Yeah.
But Republic Records was the name of the record label.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're the biggest label in the world.
Wow.
Drake, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
The Weeknd, Post Malone. Everyone's just superstars.
Yeah.
And I was with their dance music division, which is called Casablanca.
Mm-hmm.
And just their whole business model is like hits or go home. You know, like they don't want to develop artists necessarily. Yeah. It's like, hey, we're going to make you a superstar or we're not going to work together.
Wow.
And
wow, what
I'm not a superstar. So we didn't work together for very long.
Oh, well.
I wasn't then.
You are now.
My son thinks so, but nobody else.
And that's what matters.
I mean, that's very true.
Yeah. So I would love to jump in and thanks for coming on my podcast.
Of course. We've been talking about this for so long.
I know. We keep running into each other in Evergreen.
I know.
Shout out Evergreen.
Best coffee in the world.
Yes. And fun fact, I feel really drawn to your wife because she's also an Australian.
Yep.
So let's go back to like where you guys met and then maybe
We met at a wedding in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
You know, just the hotbed of culture in America.
Yeah.
And
the Midwest.
Hey, don't hate on the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana. But we met at a wedding. She was a bridesmaid with the bride was they did YWAM together down in Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
And then
where I'm from.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I had done Young Life. I was on Young Life staff with the guy who was getting married. And so this was back in February of 2012. And we were both in the wedding. So we were there all weekend and hung out. And
yeah,
I was like, wow, this girl's really cool, really pretty, awesome. Yeah. She was going back to Australia to do her master's degree. I had just signed a record deal and was going to be doing a ton of touring. And so we hung out all weekend and it was really fun. And then we didn't really talk for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I sent her a message on Facebook because it was her birthday, just saying, hey, it's been ages. Like, how are you? Give me an update. How's life? What's going on? And then it turned into more texting or more at that. This is when you actually use Facebook for like functional things.
Right.
And so we, just some messaging and that turned into texting and FaceTiming. And eventually the people who got married, they moved to Berlin and she was going to visit them that summer. And so she was, hey, why don't you come and hang out this summer in Berlin? Like, I know you go to Europe a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should come over and hang out with all of us. And I was like, I mean, cool, but I'm not going to spend all that money just like go hang out. Like, I got other things to do.
Yeah.
I go, I'll make you a deal. I can take you on a date. I'll come over. She said, all right. I don't think she believed that I was actually going to do it. And then I was like, hey, I bought my ticket. She's like, oh, dang, I'm stuck now. So that was our first date. And that was that's where it all officially start. Most expensive first date I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
And I mean, my audience loves to hear stories about how people get together. So I love that you shared that.
So dudes, grow a pair, be ballsy, make some moves, tell a girl you like her.
And buy that plane ticket.
Yeah, buy that plane ticket across the world and show up and say, what's up?
That's awesome.
Or just at least have the balls to ask her to coffee.
Yeah. So were you...
I'm just calling out dudes here. Let's just get after it.
Please do that.
Seriously, why are you guys not asking Elle out on dates? This is ridiculous.
That's right, guys.
Seriously, this is what this podcast is actually about.
Yeah, pretty much. Getting me a husband.
Yeah. Hey, I'm so down to help.
Ooh, thanks, Topa. Yeah. I appreciate it.
I would recommend leaving Reading for that.
Yeah. That's what we have to do. That's what I have to do. You know this.
We've had this conversation.
We have had this conversation. I keep going to say EMDR, because I'm in counseling and trauma world, but it's
EDM.
EDM.
Stands for electronic
dance music. Yeah. So were you into that when you met Jackie?
Yeah. I started DJing basically when I turned 15.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my birthday is a few days after Christmas and turntables are expensive. So I convinced my parents that year, this is 1999. Yeah. I think it was 1999. I was like, hey, can we do a joint present for both of them? It's just this one thing and that's it. And they agreed. And yeah, so that was the beginning of DJing. It was in 1999.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was hip hop for the first year or so. And then I heard dance music for the first time. It was Armin van Buuren Communication, and it literally changed my life in the moment. It's so crazy how much I can vividly remember that moment of hearing that song for the first time. I've never heard of any of this before, but this is what I need to start doing.
Wow. So tell me the moment you were like, oh, I could make a career out of this.
I mean, I still wonder that. No.
There
was actually a huge moment. I was in college when this happened, but I was I was friends with these girls in a sorority.
Yeah.
And they used to watch Grey's Anatomy. And so I was just popped by to say hello to them. They were watching the season finale of Grey's Anatomy. And I'm sitting there watching the show, and I don't really know what's going on, but I'm like, oh, this is fine. The soundtrack's cool. And then the last song of the last episode was Snow Patrol Chasing Cars. And this is before it was
such a good song.
Before it was a massive worldwide hit.
Really?
It was, something stuck in my hat. Before it was a massive hit. And I heard the song and I'm like, oh my gosh, this song is incredible. I need to find out what this is.
Yeah.
And I need to make a bootleg remix of it so I can, turn it into a dance record.
Yeah.
And so went home, downloaded it off iTunes, and started working on this bootleg remix of the song. And then I ended up bringing my friend involved, or I got my friend involved. His name is Blake Jarrell. He had done some really great stuff at the time. So we finished this bootleg remix of Snow Patrol Chasing Cars, and every DJ started playing it. Every DJ. There were DJs that would fight backstage at festivals who was going to play this record. So Tiesto, Armin van Buuren, all the superstars in 2006 are fighting over this record. And I'm seeing this happen. I'm like, wow, okay, there's something here. This is pretty cool. And it opened up tons of doors and opportunities with all these guys to get connected and build a relationship. And then, after 6 months, a song usually dies down a little bit.
Yeah.
And then about 2 months later, that's when the original became an absolute global smash hit. So then the remix got even bigger, on this second wave of the song. And for almost a year and a half, everyone was playing it.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm like, okay, maybe I have what it takes to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I have the ear or the ideas, whatever it is. Maybe I have just the thing to actually make this a career.
Instinct.
Yeah. And then started writing more original music. And then Tiesto signed, 14 of my records. And he asked me to do some shows with him. So I then did some shows with him in 2008. And that's when you're sitting here going, okay, there's something here. This isn't normal.
Yeah.
We should really get after this. And so did.
What year was that? Chasing Cars, when it kind of came
the out. First wave of it was 2006, and then it
that's crazy because that was the year I started clubbing, guys.
Let's
I
go.
Was probably
you might have heard it at a show,
probably because I was obsessed with Chasing Cars.
Yeah,
when
I still hear it, and I'm like, is this
that when I was sort of getting prepared for today, I went back to my 2006 year old self when I was and I looked at photos and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was a whole atmosphere.
Yeah.
The fun of going, and it was so much fun to go clubbing and dancing and stuff. And the song that always brings me back to that time in my life is Apologize by One Republic.
Yeah.
Did you ever remix?
I didn't remix it, but there were either a million
bootleg remixes. Oh, so many.
I mean, that record was huge.
Yeah, there were so many hits. That's crazy. And so what's being, because you're a Christian and going into that clubbing world, I think a lot of Christians feel like that's dark or,
they don't feel like it. They say it all the time.
They have their opinions about it. And I know, for me, I definitely went through clubbing stages mm-hmm. where it's kind of like you go to the club for attention, and then it's almost like when you stay out partying that late, the lights come up, you see the floor super sticky, it's kind of gross, and it's kind of like your fantasy life is over. And I'd love to just kind of like get your take on the atmosphere and like what's been your journey in going into those places.
I feel like my experience has just been so much different than a lot of other people's, where I never went into those places to party. Mm. It was a genuine love of the music, and that was the only place you could find it, you know? And so I would sneak into shows. I'd use I have an older brother, so I'd use his ID, and when I was under 21, I'd go to shows, never drink, never do anything, but I would just go because I'm like,
really,
this is the only place I can engage with this music.
Yeah.
You know, and this was in the mid 2000s. So Spotify didn't exist. YouTube didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, all the ways that we consume music nowadays, like none of it existed back then. And so if you wanted to hear this music, you had to download it illegally off Napster, which is
LimeWire.
Some people might not even know what Napster is.
Did you guys have LimeWire?
Yeah. I mean, it's all just the illegal downloading era of, totally. Of music.
Yeah.
And that was, the only way you could really experience it. You couldn't watch videos.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays you can go on YouTube and just type in whatever concert, you can find a million videos of it. You couldn't do that then. And so you had to go to the show to experience it. And all these DJs are playing my songs. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I've got to go to these shows and see this.
Yeah.
I want to see people reacting to my music. And so it was never to party, never to pick up girls, none of that. Like, it was literally, I love this music. I love the lights. Yeah. I love the loud sound system, the bass that just hits you in the chest. Like, I love all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went for those reasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is just kind of backwards for a lot of people.
Right.
You know, I did some partying when I was younger in high school, but then I stopped when I turned 18 before I went to college.
Yeah.
Which is also very backwards. Usually it's like, oh, I was this pure innocent kid in high school.
Yeah.
Went to college and went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I was the opposite. And so going to clubs and going to shows, it was seriously just about the music and wanting to be around this.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So my next question is kind of more around, like, I think that music is so deeply spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it literally transports you places. It transcends you. That's why I love art, because it takes you places that, like, you know, even in therapy, you can talk about things, but then a music will impact you and you'll be able to heal through music and all of that. So I'd love to hear your take on incorporating like the spiritual side in with music, and what's been your observation, or how you know, collect, because it's very much I think all ideas come from the spirit. So it's like, I'd love to know your kind of perspective or process with involving it in a spiritual way.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you have a relationship with Jesus, like, everything you do should come out of overflow of that.
Yeah.
And so creativity is a part of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if your faith actually affects every area of your life,
yeah,
then it's going to make a huge impact on the music. And so, you know, nowadays when I'm writing, I'll sit there and go, all right, Lord, what do you want to share with the earth? I know you've got songs in heaven for this time in history. I'd love to partner with you and release those on the earth. And what does that look like? What are you trying to say? What's your heart? Or, I mean, I think everything, I don't like when people try and use the sacred and secular terms.
Yeah.
I think it does such a disservice to creativity. We don't do it in any other area of culture for some reason. Like, you're not a Christian football player or a secular football player. You just play football.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are Christians, it's an outpouring of that. And so I think art and creativity should be the same way. If I'm spending time with the Lord, like, whatever's coming out of me is a reflection of that.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It's like a really simple version of
that
process.
Because you recently, I feel like I'm trying to remember where I was, because I saw on your Instagram you posted the Rick Rubin short clip, and I'm a huge Rick Rubin fan.
Yeah.
Like, I just love who he is as a human. Like, he's very much
a deep thinker.
He's a deep thinker, but he's very, like, no fear of man about
it. He does not care what anybody else
thinks. I just, like, love watching people like that. But you posted something, and it got something like 2 million views.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Yeah.
It's funny. I saw I saw the video on somebody else's story. There's a guy, this comedian, Taylor Ransom, I think is his name.
Okay.
He does these hilarious skits. He's like kind of pokes fun at Christian charismania.
Right.
He's so funny. But he had posted the clip on his story. And I watch it. I'm sort of going, wait a minute. This is what everybody, especially Christians, need to hear. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know where Rick Rubin's at in life with anything, but whatever this is the truth. So I screen recorded it, made a reaction video.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to share this with my fans. Like, I think that's just kind of what it was for, was people that follow me on Instagram. And then 2 days later, 3 days later, it's like got a million views and then it just keeps going. And then all of a sudden everybody has a comment and a, you know, an opinion to share. And then it's people just getting these crazy theological battles. And so it's wild to watch just something go viral that big. I had other posts have viral moments, but this was like viral.
Yeah.
And just seeing the journey of that happen. And then what happens in that process is everybody feels like they are justified to share their opinion about something.
Right.
And they chime in and it has like, I think it's like 100,000 comments, or like 100,000 likes, so many comments, whatever it is. The number's crazy. And I like would scroll through and just be like, wow, people are so angry and people have such a distorted view of creativity in the music industry.
Yeah.
And it was super disappointing to see so many Christians like, oh, this is demonic. This guy's in the Illuminati. This is satanic. And it's like,
really?
I mean, you should go read the comments. Yes, and then people then people get in like racial confrontation because he's a white guy and, you know, and he comes from the hip hop world and helped founded like so many
early Beatles and
old, I mean, like he just, it's so I was like, wow, people are just really angry.
Yeah.
and they feel like this is the place to share it. I don't know why. And then people are like, this is so dumb. Why is this guy's face in the corner? I'm like, it's literally a reaction video. Like, this is a trend.
Right.
You know, like,
if
you don't like it, you don't have to comment or engage with the video. But social media is, it just shows the underbelly of humanity at times.
Underbelly is a great word.
This is this is interesting. But I also think it's incredible, like, how many people sent me messages. Man, thank you for posting this. This is so cool. And what he said is just true. I mean, basically, the gist of it is the ultimate form of creativity is worship under God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then there's the theological, what God's he talking about? And it's like, well, look, I understand
that. Meat throw at the bones, guys.
But I'm like, what he's saying is true.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a Christian, the ultimate form of creativity that you can show up with should be worship under the Lord.
Right.
And I'm like, can't we just be spiritually and emotionally mature enough to understand that?
Yeah.
And apparently
not.
There aren't that many things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that creatives have always had this kind of kickback because we have to be willing to explore new territory and like that kind of thing. But I'm curious to know, I mean, you kind of mentioned it, like what resonated so much with you in watching that clip?
I mean, the clip's longer.
Yeah, it's like an hour.
Well, I mean, it's from a podcast. Yeah. And there's some other clips that he talks about of just like as a creative, like you can't care what anybody else thinks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different conversation. But this clip specifically, I'm sitting there watching and being like, this dude, I don't know where he's at with faith or anything in life other than I know he's a genius with music.
Yeah.
Is sharing something that I wish every pastor and creative person in the church would share and talk about because this is the truth. And it's a shame that there's a guy who, wherever he's at, is sharing something that is actually what is on the Father's heart, but it's not Christian sharing it.
Yeah.
And so I just watched it and I was like, wow, I'm blown away that he is having this revelation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially this late in life where he's created so much. And it was interesting. Yeah. He goes, I recently came to the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's obviously on some sort of journey, which I think is interesting and fascinating in itself.
Totally.
But when someone shares something like that you're like, oh, this is the kingdom of heaven. Like that right there is the heart of the Father. Who, no matter who's saying it, like that's the truth. I need to share this with people.
Yeah. And I think he demonstrates his maturity with his ego, because I think a lot of the time in creativity, I mean, I work a lot with actors and I recently did an acting course in New York. So I think you're constantly getting feedback and your ego does take a hit because you're looking for evidence of like, am I good at this or not good at this? Like, affirm me. Whereas like, he's actually like Rick Rubin's like sitting in a posture of sonship. Not that he's necessarily saved, but like going like, actually, it's not about me. It's actually about being like a portal, like having a portal that's clear, you know, that's connected to God. And so I'd love to know, like, how has your journey been with the ego?
Yeah.
Because I think, and with, I mean, even you mentioned in what he mentioned in that podcast was about really letting go of what people think of you.
Yeah.
And how has that journey been for you?
I mean, it definitely had its different phases. When you're younger, you're hungry, you're just wanting things to connect and wanting things to happen, and you feel way more validation than you should, or, you know, dissatisfaction than you should.
Yeah.
And so it swings, it definitely for me was swinging a lot harder one way or the other. And I remember just hustling, because I can make things happen on my own. I'm good at connecting with people and all that. And so that can be done in a healthy way and that can be done in an unhealthy way.
Mm.
And when I was younger, it was definitely, it wasn't like I resented anybody, but it was like, okay, oh, this is an opportunity to get to this, or maybe this door opens or whatever, rather than just valuing them as people.
Yeah.
And so you get older and then you realize, wow, people need to be valued for just who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, you're going to get way more out of that person relationally and potentially business-wise than you ever would if you just wanted a business opportunity out of it. And so, I mean, the ego thing is funny because if you love Jesus, like it should look different than everybody else.
Right.
Just not even with just being in the music industry, but it's in life in general. But yeah, I mean, you definitely have your journey you go through. And I mean, I've been in the music industry for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And so it will chip away at all sorts of things throughout the years. And sometimes your heart gets calloused in areas that are unhealthy, and in other ways your skin gets a bit tougher than it should, like in a healthy way, because I think a lot of Christians are really soft and they can't handle feedback and they can't handle it not being perfect and lovely and cuddly all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're not going to ever function in the real world if you can't, take a
totally,
some harsh feedback from time to time. But it's definitely a journey. And the older you get and the more time you spend with the Lord and the deeper your relationship gets, the healthier identity you have, the more secure you are and who you are and who God made you to be, it definitely changes all those other things.
Yeah.
But especially now with everything going on, like I'll sit there and I'll have times where I just weep, being like, wow, I'm so humbled and honored that I get to partner with the God of the universe to do this thing right now that he's doing on the earth through dance music.
Yeah.
And it's not about me. Cause we had a really blunt conversation with the Lord. I remember I was driving home from playing pickleball, and this is before all the Rave Jesus stuff was like becoming public and popping off, but the Lord was stirring my heart and he was making it very clear, like, hey, this is what I have. And I'm sitting there being like, I hate this because I don't want to do anything in the Christian world.
Yeah.
Like this effect that like deeply offends me because Christian art's terrible. That was my perspective.
Yeah.
It's definitely gotten better, but
and
this is only like 4 or 5 months ago. I'm having this conversation with the Lord. And he was like, well, cool. This is going to happen, whether it's you or somebody else. So you get to pick if you want to partner with me or not. Like, I'm not going to make you do anything, but I'm doing this.
Yeah.
So you can either get on board or you can hop off.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're like, okay, this has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nothing to do with me at
all. No ego.
Yeah, you're like,
it sounds like you wouldn't choose this necessarily.
No, I always say, if I come to this on my own, I would have thrown this in the dumpster.
Yeah.
I'm like, this sounds exactly what I never wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Like worship raves for Christians? No, I had zero interest in any of that.
Yeah.
But those are the moments where you're like, okay, actually has nothing to do with me. And just the longer you're in the industry, like you experience a lot more failure.
Yeah.
Which is very humbling. And I think in a healthy way.
Yeah, totally.
You also experience way more success, but you learn, like, the journey of all this is, it should humble you greatly and also deepen your identity as a person at the same time.
Yeah. I can imagine it like fine tunes your focus.
Yeah.
And you kind of get more settled in like your lane.
Yes.
And what you're meant to do. So tell me more the vision and heart behind Rave Jesus.
Well,
I mean, hearing the inception of it,
yeah,
is pretty cool. Like the wrestle.
I mean, yeah, basically this time last year, the Lord started talking to me about doing writing camps with like Christians to write just this kingdom house music sound.
Awesome.
And he's like, it doesn't need to sound like worship music. It needs to sound like house music, but carry my heart. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Who do you want me to invite? So he told me who to invite. We did the first one in January and it was awesome. And then at the beginning of the year, the Lord said very clearly to me, you're going to start doing events that are parallel to the industry and it's going to gain so much momentum. It's going to become a movement. Then it's going to go back into the industry. I'm like, okay, whatever that means. Like maybe we're going to have some cool branded concept. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't really think a ton about it because I was like, I'm not going to try and like make this happen. We'll just see. And then went up to Seattle in May to play a show. Felt like we should do a DJ-led worship set the next night in the same venue. So we did. And it was wild to see the difference between the two nights.
Mm.
And so the normal night it was fine.
Mm.
But the DJ-led worship night was awesome.
Wow.
I'm on the plane flying back to Reading going, man, I don't know. This is weird.
Yeah.
DJ-led worship night was so much better than the normal club night. Why is this?
Mm.
And then called my friend, Tommy Martinson, who runs Evergreen Church in LA, and said, hey, I think LA is the next place for this. This is what happened in Seattle. Like, what do you think?
Yeah.
And he was like, I love this. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
So we get everything sorted. We announce the show. It sells out in 8 hours. And the Lord was like, this is the parallel to the industry thing I was telling you about. All your shows need to be branded as Rave Jesus shows. And this is, like, because I branded it as a Rave Jesus show, the one in LA, which, you know, I led a call for the dance music industry for basically 5 years that's called Rave Jesus.
Yeah.
And the Lord was like, this is the event inception of that. And so it was very easy to just keep that in line. It's like, oh, we're just doing events with the same heart as the call.
Yeah.
And then seeing it sell out in 8 hours, and I just was like, this is so exciting. And I don't know how I feel about this because I'm kind of pissed off
really?
And annoyed.
Does it feel vulnerable at all?
No. No, it's not vulnerable.
Yeah.
I had to wrestle with the Lord so much.
Yeah.
Being like, I think this is super cool that it's selling out and it's really exciting, but I also am kind of, like, it's kind of humiliating in my mind in some ways too.
Totally.
Because in my mind,
yeah,
the standard for the regular music industry is so much higher than the Christian music industry and just Christian art in general.
Yeah.
And I'm like I operate over here at this level. I don't want to like come down to this level.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Lord was like, well, cool, if that's your perspective, but you can stay at the same level and just move it over here.
Yeah.
And help showcase a new model to people in the church and bring people along rather than just critique it all the time. Like, that's, you can make a difference.
Yeah.
And
put
your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Dang. Well,
why are you trying to just like get at me, bro? I mean, there's so many of those conversations.
I know.
Dang it.
I know. But I think like authenticity is so magnetic.
Mm.
So it's like if you're, I mean, because I really do get like the cheese factor of like Christian entertainment and stuff.
Yeah.
And so the fear is like, I don't want to be that.
100%.
But then there is that clunky, when you are pioneering something, it's not exactly at the level that you're imagining all the time.
Mm.
And so that's like, you know, risky. But I think that like, it sounds like the most authentic thing for you to do is a Rave Jesus, but then you have to kind of work through all the cringe of like it feeling like, oh, what's sort of been out there in the past or how it's been perceived. But I think that's how you innovate.
Right. And so the way that I get by the, oh, I don't want this to be cheesy Christian stuff is just make sure it's not cheesy Christian.
Make sure it's not. Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, how do we throw real events?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to keep it at that standard, but what's the heart of the Father?
Yeah.
And how do we make that at that level of excellence?
Yeah.
And so it's been fascinating for me to watch all my friends just in the dance music industry in the US and in Europe sit here and go, dude, this is incredible.
Wow.
This is amazing. I want to come to a show. Like, I want to partner with you.
Wow.
no one's ever done this. This is genius. And I'm like, what? They're like, no. Yeah. Like, this is like everyone and all these people know that I'm a Christian, but they're like, oh, no one's ever done this before. And like, this was actually the best, most encouraging bit of feedback I got. My buddy is the vice president of Astralworks, which is the dance music division of Capitol Records.
Wow.
And he said, I send him the music. And I go, dude, just shoot me straight. Like, what are your honest thoughts? Cause he's been on the Ray Jesus calls and he knows me and knows my heart. And I'd done some records with them in the past that have done well. And I was like, just give me your honest feedback. Like, I need my friends to be really brutally honest with me. Like, is this dumb and I'm like losing my mind or this is genius? Mm-hmm. And he listened to the music and we met up the day after the show in LA. He was like, this is genius and it's going to work because the music's amazing. So people in dance music will just love it because it's great music.
Yeah.
And Christians will love it because they're going to get the message behind it. Mm. And you also have enough of a track record in the industry where you're credible, where people will just be like, oh, this is a cool expression of what he's doing, not a Christian trying to ram themselves into the industry from the outside.
Yes.
Like trying to use the industry to get something. It's actually the other way around.
Yeah.
And so that was super encouraging to get that feedback because, you know, I would have these thoughts of like, this is going to turn a lot of people off because anytime you bring Jesus or God into something, people get triggered or they have preconceived notions about all sorts of things. And everyone in the industry, their feedback has been, no, like this is so awesome because it's you and you have history and we all love you and you're actually good at what you do. So this is just an expression, an extension of that rather than someone who doesn't know dance music, who is a Christian trying to use dance music as an agenda to get somewhere. That would be perceived very differently.
Yeah.
So after that, I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I think that's a sign of like, I think a lot of young creatives need to hear that kind of thing because you have to do your time. You have to serve, like you have to build trust with an industry. And like, I love that you bring up the agenda thing because I think that there's a lot of Christian agenda. There's a lot of political agenda. And
I mean, like
it's everywhere.
I hate it when anybody uses whatever it is. Like I hate when you see crazy woke people.
Right.
Trying to like, we're like destroying movies as we know them nowadays.
Yes.
Like, no, like just, I just want good art.
Yes.
Stop ruining this because your agenda is so strong.
Yeah.
You don't actually care about the creative process or the story or anything. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way when Christians do that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is actually terrible. And I don't want nothing to do with it because it's just not good.
Yeah.
And when... Yeah. You know, this is why The Chosen is crushing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's because Dallas Jenkins wasn't this random person who had this idea who was like, I'm going to then all of a sudden use film and TV to tell the story about Jesus. Like he has a deep, deep history in the industry.
Yep.
And this is just the next thing he's working on. Like he had a major studio deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't work out like he wanted it to, but like he was at that level.
Right.
And so he has the expertise, the excellence. Yeah. And the know-how and the relationships where he's respected. Yeah. And then he goes and does this and everyone's like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the favor of the Lord is just so on it that like,
it's
disrupting the whole industry.
Yeah, you have to do your time for sure and build trust. I love that. I'm curious to know like the rave Jesus nights. I know you just have one in Reading.
Yep.
I think, yeah. I went to one of your nights before you moved here. Like at the Stirring.
Oh, when Eric Allen was doing the Black Box.
Yeah.
Those were, when I was living in Amsterdam, when we'd be here, we'd do those.
Yeah, I remember you came across, it was so, I think I went to a couple of them. That were super fun. So when you say worship, like this is what I'm imagining, and this is maybe what my audience are imagining, like a remix of a, you know, no longer a slave, like a worship song. Is that what happens? Or you've written the music?
There's definitely both.
Oh, cool.
Where there's a lot of original music that is just from scratch that we feel like carries the heart of the Father. And then there's, you know, stuff where we've flipped old hymns into really cool modern records. Yeah. And then there's been some more recent ones that we've done some songs the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years that I actually like. Or sometimes we'll take the lyrics and change the melodies. We're like, oh, I love the story, but actually don't feel like, you know, we like two of the recent ones we've done are the I Could Sing of Your Love Forever.
Great song.
But like it sounds nothing like the original.
Oh, really?
It's like this epic, uplifting, like bumping house record now.
Wow, that's so cool.
And so there's that. And then we've done a version of Jen Johnson's "You're Gonna Be Okay."
Oh, that's
which is like
cool.
A super deep piano ballad. Yeah. And now it's like this epic uplifting trance record.
Yeah.
With like big choir and all this stuff. And so we'll do that and we'll do stuff that we just write from scratch because I think both are needed and valuable.
Yeah. I mean, "You're Gonna Be Okay," that's a song I think you could even play in normal clubs.
I mean, I play all this stuff everywhere. So I just had a show in Indianapolis on Friday at a normal club.
Yeah.
And I played, we flipped "It Is Well With My Soul." Like,
that's awesome.
This awesome, like melodic techno trance thing, and played it at the show. And like, everyone's just going crazy.
Yeah.
And I played "You're Gonna Be Okay." And like, everyone in the club's hugging each other and hands in the air, taking photos. They're all singing along by the second chorus. And you know, when you see stuff like this happen,
that's cool.
This is cool. People just want, great music that hits deep. And
hits deep, for sure. It's like the song, I'm blanking, by Avicii, "Don't You Worry, Child, Heaven's Got a Plan for You."
That's Swedish House Mafia. That is a worship song.
Totally. I remember like a friend who wasn't a Christian, just being like, yeah, when that song comes on, like she did like this whole like worship thing. And I was like, oh, because it like really like hits you deep that heaven's got a plan for you.
Yeah.
Our hearts like need to know this, you know, so it's wild. I'd love to know, how have you seen God show up in the club?
It's so many crazy ways.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing people get healed.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there was one show specifically last year in, I'm not going to name the city because I don't want to. 12 people got healed, and I'm not like preaching from the stage or anything. You know, we'll have people come to shows and I'm like, hey, I trust you and your relationship with the Holy Spirit. Walk around, dance. If you feel like you have a word of knowledge for someone, go share it. Pray for people if you feel like it. My two rules are like, don't be weird and don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Like,
they're good
that's
rules.
It. Like, other than that, like, go, you have free reign to do whatever you need to do as far as what the Holy Spirit's asking you to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, people at these shows are so hungry for some sort of experience.
Yes.
You know, I always say there's actually a huge level of faith in the room at these shows.
Mm.
And you walk into a club, people are expecting and wanting some sort of encounter that's greater than their daily life.
Yeah.
So that's why they go and they drink or they take drugs, whatever it is, and there's crazy lighting and all this stuff. They want some sort of supernatural experience.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes, there's this belief, I'm going to experience something tonight.
Yeah. Oh, that's why I went to the club.
And so when there's that level of faith in the room, the Lord is desperate to show up and meet people.
Wow.
And so when you walk in, you're like, all right, Lord, let's partner with you in whatever you want to do here tonight.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff happens.
Yeah, and that's wild.
I've never had so many people say, and this is like heartbreaking and so exciting at the same time, but they'll be like, man, why didn't anyone tell me God was like this?
Wow.
Like, oh, how old are you? Like, what have we been doing? If the first time you're encountering God like this is at 2 a.m. on the dance floor at a club in whatever city.
Yeah.
Like, what does that say about how the church is actually engaging in culture? So it's really cool that a person has that experience, but it's also incredibly infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking back, what the heck are we doing? Like, seriously, people, like, there's no reason that someone should be, you know, 35 or 40 years old having their first genuine encounter with the Lord. Like, get it together, church.
Right.
Come on, guys.
Yeah. That's crazy. One of my students had her first, she had no like Christian relatives or anything. She'd just go out clubbing and partying. And she literally had a visitation. Like, she went to order a drink and Jesus like appeared to her in the club. No one witnessed to her. And she had an encounter and like totally changed her life. Like, and now was saved. So I really believe like God loves clubs.
He does.
Yeah.
Heaven's going to be the craziest rave ever.
Exactly. I love it.
Jesus is a pretty sick DJ, I hear.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
Now, hold on. I want to hear more about this.
Yeah.
Where was this?
So, San Francisco, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You see the craziest things happen in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And Oakland. So, like, just the Bay in general.
Yeah.
We've had so many insane testimonies from these shows. And I love that it's the Bay, because yes, there's such a mm-hmm. a preconceived notion of what San Francisco is. And there's a lot of stuff that's really frustrating about the city. Yeah. But we see some of the craziest yeah. things happen.
Yeah.
At no, all yeah. the shows in the Bay.
I just love it because I think you're right. There is a hunger. Like people who are going out clubbing, they are wanting adventure. And like the reason why you go take drugs is because you're looking for some sort of like transcendent experience. Yep. And that to me is what our faith is, a transcendent experience. Like, and so, but yeah, my student, she literally had no one in her family ever talking about God or anything.
Do you know
anything.
What club it was?
I'll find out. Well, my last question is, where do you see the music industry going? And like, what do you think God's heart, the future of music is?
I mean, his heart is for healthier artists and art and creativity and a healthier industry that actually right. honors and glorifies him
yeah.
in every single way, shape, and form.
Mm.
What that looks like practically, I mean, I don't want to get in the nitty-gritty of deals and the business side of things, but
yeah,
the Lord wants artists who are healthy, who can carry his heart and carry it with excellence and showcase it mm-hmm. where his kids can actually lead
yeah.
an industry, a generation, lead culture, mm-hmm. you know, through art and creativity that is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much of Christians and their creativity has just been a knockoff replication of whatever the world's
yeah.
doing.
Yeah.
And then they don't do it nearly as well. So then it's just bad, yeah. a bad knockoff version of Coldplay or whatever. And it's like, mm-hmm. that's just not how God... Like, God doesn't replicate anything.
Right.
Like, he's not trying to copy anything else. Like, I don't understand why we do the same thing, mm-hmm. or like Christians have done that. And I really believe we're going to see a new renaissance here in the next 5-10 years mm-hmm. where you're going to see some of the best art and creativity we've ever had in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Because it's actually going to bring heaven to earth, and people yeah. are going to, you know, the art from the renaissance, like, we still are in awe of today.
Yeah.
Hundreds of years later. There's not a lot of art that's been created recently that people are going to care about in 15 years.
Right.
And that has to change. Like, we need yeah. to create from an eternal perspective rather than what's going to work now.
Yeah.
And the only people who can really think eternally are actually people that know the Holy Spirit, know Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's going to be people that actually start creating from that place and yeah. with that in mind. And with that, it's going to usher in heaven through art and creativity, and people are going to be dramatically impacted from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, the church can actually lead culture for once rather than
yeah.
be off to the side and complain about it.
Complaining and writing comments. Yeah. Actually, I do.
Just don't write any more comments on my Instagram,
please. Yeah. yeah. I'm going to go check out your comments.
You should.
Now. Yeah.
You should. We should do a follow-up podcast where we just read comments and we dissect
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that'd be good. And really dig into people's judgments yeah. and what's behind their judgment.
Oh, man.
But actually, I do have one more question.
Yeah. Ask as many as you want.
Because it's called The Next Brave Thing, my podcast. It's really to catalyze, like, get people to take action.
Yeah.
And I think from hearing you talk, I really feel this strong thing of like, you have to get excellent at what you do.
Mm.
Like that's real, because I think some people, I mean, I work with artists, so I like, and worked with artists for years, and they'll be like, I want to influence Hollywood.
Ugh.
And yep. then I'm like, what's your talent? Like, what's your gift? Like how you, because that's what will make room for you. The Bible even says it.
Yeah.
And so, I'm really hearing, yeah, be excellent at what you do, but I think you have to have a real strong, intimate connection with God
yep.
to obviously, you know, like get his ideas and his heart. But I wonder what courage looks like for you personally, but maybe like, because I think in being in an industry, why people are so scared of the industry is probably because of like fear of, you know, you're going to sell your soul to the devil or something or compromise. So I'm guessing it takes courage to be authentic and to be
yeah.
you.
The industry yeah. doesn't compromise. People do. And I think people need to remember that. Like
there's this
yeah. belief like, oh, the industry, like it's so compromised. Like, no, it's not the industry. It's people make choices. Individual choices over and over again to compromise who they are, whatever their beliefs are. And so I hate when people are like, oh, that industry is so this.
Yeah.
And so that's like, no, well, it's not an industry issue. It's a people issue.
It's a hot issue.
And so if you can be in that industry, and if you're healthy, operate where you're not compromising.
Right.
It's not an industry thing. No one's making you do anything. No one makes you sign a record deal. No one makes you go and act. No one makes you, like, you don't have to do these things.
Yeah.
Like, are there opportunities to compromise? 100%. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to engage in that. And so I think there's this weird, like, belief that, oh, if you're an actor, you're going to be compromised. So, and if you're in music, and it's like, no, you have the choice to say yes or no to things. That's on you. And you can live with the repercussions of either of those.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to hear about these industries being so compromising. It's not the industry. I think people, you know, have a healthy identity of who you are, what you're called to do, and don't budge and show up over and over and over again every single day for years and years and years and just watch what the Lord does with that faithfulness.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to do that, like, well, then I don't know what to tell you. I always ask people, if it would take you 20 years for this dream that you have in your heart, if it took you 20 years for that to happen, would you still say yes to it? And if your answer is no, then don't go for it.
Yeah.
You don't have what it takes. You will not have the character or the fortitude or the perseverance to actually walk things out in this industry. I'm not saying it will take that long, but if you're not willing to, if that's not your mentality, like you will never make it.
Yeah. So what does risk look like for you now? Because you've like pretty established. And I'm guessing, well, Rave Jesus feels like a risk. So,
I mean,
that's
I felt like I was risking my whole, like, everything. Am I flushing everything down the toilet?
Really?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Those were thoughts that I've had.
Yeah. Yeah. So, risk, why would you say that risk is an important ingredient to being an artist?
Yeah. If everything we're doing is comfortable, it never requires any faith.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
If it's, you're also probably never going to do anything that makes an impact if it's easy.
Right.
You know, pioneering's hard.
Yeah.
Creating is hard. Mm-hmm. If it's easy all the time, like, you're probably not even close to what your capacity or what you're capable of if it's easy. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something, you know, you should be going after things and dreaming of things that when you end, you're like, well, there's a massive gap between me and this dream.
Wow.
And if there isn't, I think you could do it all on yourself. So like, why have the Lord involved in the process?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So there has to be space in whatever you're doing for the Lord to show up. And that usually means it has to be bigger than you're capable of. Mm-hmm. And I think that's risk is like, okay, God, are you actually who you say you are?
Yeah.
You've put this on my heart. You've given me these prophetic words.
Yeah.
Are you actually going to show up like you said you were?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're not going to give those things opportunities, like, you're probably going to just do average things with average art and go work a day job.
Yeah. That's so good. Got to take risks, guys. That's so good. So, final question.
I love this.
So many. Yeah. Well, you're saying such good stuff.
We're in no rush. We're in no rush.
You're just saying great things. So I'm like, I could keep asking you questions. This is great. Well, actually, no. When's the next Rave Jesus?
I have a show next Friday in San Francisco.
Okay. Yeah.
On December 1st.
Yeah.
But the next one in Reading, the next official big one will be this spring.
Okay.
We might do a couple pop-up.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Live recording type things.
Yeah.
That's might awesome. Be one next weekend.
Okay.
We're
I need to
working
get
out some details.
To
yeah.
Yeah.
You haven't been to one.
Not a Rave Jesus.
Yeah.
No.
You got to come.
Maybe I'll come to San Francisco.
You should come.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The next proper Rave Jesus show, tickets, big production, all that stuff will be this spring.
Yeah.
But we're going to do a couple pop-up live recording things. But it'll be free.
Yeah.
They'll be doing a couple of those in between.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and there's like a whole tour for next year. Like we're confirming a bunch of shows for next spring. And
that's awesome.
That's exciting. Feels like we're just getting started with this thing. It's going to be crazy.
So this is my deep question.
All right. Let's hear it. All of this has just been casual conversation.
Yeah. Now. My deep question is Topher today. What advice would you give to Topher, 15-year-old Topher?
Oof. I wish I would have, I'm trying to think of how to word this. It's not that I didn't care about people. I wish I would have viewed people healthier at a younger age than I did, where people weren't opportunities, they're people. And opportunities come from relationship with people, but people are not opportunities.
Yeah.
And so I wish I would have understood that at a younger age. Part of it's just being, you're young and immature and you don't know a lot about life yet. Also, you know, I didn't really know the Holy Spirit back then. I wish I would have. That's probably the biggest advice, is I didn't really know the Holy Spirit until I was in my early 30s, I felt like.
Yeah.
And so I wish, looking back, like I knew, I see things, I'm like, oh, the Holy Spirit was there the whole time. But I wish I had developed an actual relationship with the Holy Spirit much, much younger. But as far as practical things, people are not opportunities. Relationship creates opportunities. And that'd be a big one. I mean, perseverance is never an issue for me, but I wish I would be like, hey, it's going to be so much harder and so much longer than you think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a real thing.
And, you know, and maybe it's a good thing you don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think that's why the Lord he'll give us these prophetic words, but he's not going to tell us what the journey is going to look like to get there.
Yeah.
Because if you knew the journey, you'd be like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I get words all the time. Especially when I was younger, I get words and I'd be like, this is incredible. Oh my gosh. As you get older, I get these big words and I go home and I like weep on the floor. I'm like, this is going to cost so much.
Totally.
You know? And so I think just that as a young kid, like, hey, this is going to cost a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But
it does.
If you do this with the Lord, it's 100% worth it.
That's so beautiful. I love that you shared that, because it's such a, I think, there is this, like, we live in an instant world where we want the prophetic word tomorrow, you know?
I mean, that's a reflection of culture also. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't talk about long suffering as a fruit of the Spirit anymore.
Right,
It's all joy and hope and da-da-da. Yeah. And you're like, yay!
Yeah.
And you're like, what about long suffering?
Yeah.
Like, can you endure? Can you keep going for years and years and years and years? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's also...
Yeah.
You know, I had this thought, because my wife works with a lady named Catherine Warnock, who spoke at Third Year yesterday.
And she works for The Chosen.
Yeah, and is a VP at The Chosen. And so they work in the office together, and Catherine spoke at Third Year, and my wife went to listen, and she just shared some things. And I was just, this thought that I kept thinking after that conversation with Jacqueline was, like, the Lord relentlessly pursues us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we're afraid to, like, relentlessly pursue things. You know, as Christians, we always feel like, oh, that's striving, or that's
right.
performance, or...
Yeah.
But like, if we want to replicate the Lord, his pursuit of us is so relentless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should replicate that in what he's called us to do as well.
Yes.
And I don't know why that is never talked about. Like, his the pursuit that he has for our hearts will never, ever, ever be able to comprehend and understand.
Yeah.
Yet, anytime we're supposed to go do something, it's like, oh, don't strive. That's performance. That's ego. That's this. And it's like, I hear you, but there has to be this relentless pursuit in our hearts towards what God has called us to do and who we're made to be, and obviously pursuit of him, but I don't know why we're afraid of that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
It's like relentless, fearless, that's like sick. I will give up anything to go after this thing.
Yeah.
That's how the Lord feels about us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying we need to do that in everything in our life, but I don't know. It's like we're afraid to replicate that aspect of who he is. I don't understand why.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good, because a lot of why creatives give up is because they can't persevere, they can't complete something or finish something. And I think that's such a big mark of, like, maturity is perseverance.
Yeah.
And James talks about that in the Bible. So, yeah, that's so powerful. And I do have to vouch, you are, every time I see you in Evergreen, you treat everyone the same. Mm. Like, you're such a, I mean, you never look at anyone. Like, I, every time I see you, I'm like, you're like the person, it's like you've never met a stranger, really. So you really do walk in that thing. You're not looking for the person who's the most famous. Like, you've never been that person. You're so grounded. And I love that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. That's so cool.
No, it's a sad way to live life if that's your approach.
It's a hypervigilant way to
and
live.
And I, you know, I'm in Evergreen so much that like nobody is a stranger anymore.
Yeah, I know. I know. Even I saw him right before we recorded this podcast.
At Evergreen.
Just driving up to Evergreen, I'm like, I wonder if I'm going to see Cobra. Sure enough.
I did have meetings there this morning, but
yeah,
I'm there every morning with my son. And
yeah, little son.
He knows everybody too.
Yeah.
That's so good.
He's a champ.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. Yeah. It's so awesome to have you. And I'm excited to come check out this Rave Jesus and excited just to see what comes of it.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on here. And if anybody's interested, you can follow me on Instagram at Royal King Topher. And then we have a Rave Jesus Instagram, which is Rave Jesus Music. And so
yeah,
we'll come check us out and champion us and come to shows and let's hear testimonies of God wrecking people in the middle of nightclubs.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we'll make sure we have the links in the bio so you can jump on those links. And we just got to get you to Australia, do a rave in Australia.
I've had actually prophetic words about that. So
you know, Melbourne would love it.
I mean, we're supposed to go down to Australia next month. I'm interested to see if the Lord makes anything happen. Are you going to be down there?
I hope so. It's all dependent on my green card.
Well,
yeah.
That's a whole podcast.
That's a whole
podcast. That we should have another time.
Yeah. I'll get Jacqueline on. Yeah. Oh, and Lord. Her and I will talk about our green card process.
Pray for us, please.
Pray for us. Yes. Anyway, well, thanks for coming on.
It's been awesome. I'm glad we finally made it happen.
We made it happen.
Yep.
It's so good.
Yep.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.